Welcome to Sharing the Spectrum and Autism Canada podcast, an engaging series of discussions about relevant topics including parenting, relationships, employment, education, nutrition, and so much more. We look forward to introducing you to people from our ASD community and sharing their perspectives on life and autism. And now, please enjoy this episode of Sharing the Spectrum and Autism Canada podcast.
We will we'll get started. Oh, there's somebody else. Hang on. We'll get started and I'll let people in as we go along. So welcome everybody. Thank you for joining us tonight. This is the third of our back to school webinars, and we're super excited tonight to be talking about IEPs and IPPs and probably IPRCs and all of the other IP things that happen in all of the provinces. If you missed the first two of our sessions, sorry, I'm getting distracted by people coming in here. If you missed the first two of our sessions, you can find them on our YouTube channel, which is Autism Canada on YouTube, and also via our podcast that's called Sharing the Spectrum. My name is Julie Perkis, and I'm with Autism Canada, and I'm going to be your moderator this evening. Before we start, I'm just going to do a quick land acknowledgement. So if you could just take a moment with me. I would just like to acknowledge the Indigenous peoples of all the lands that we are on today. While we meet today on a virtual platform, we would like to take a moment to acknowledge the importance of the lands we call home. We do this to reaffirm our commitment and responsibility in improving relationships between nations and to improving our own understanding of local Indigenous peoples and their cultures. From coast to coast to coast, we acknowledge the ancestral and unceded territory of all the Inuit, Métis, and First Nations people that call this land home. Please join us in a moment of reflection to acknowledge the harms and mistakes of the past and to consider how we are and can each in our own way move forward in a spirit of reconciliation and collaboration. Thank you. Just before we get started, I just want to thank those of you who made a donation to Autism Canada on your registration. Obviously those donations are the things that allow us to run these free webinars. If you would like to make a donation after the fact, obviously you can do that on autismcanada.org at any time. We're grateful to those of you who did donate, and we want to thank you very much for your support. Okay, so let us introduce our panel here. Sorry, I just keep getting distracted by people coming in. It doesn't matter where, because on your screen it'll be different than mine, but we have Bruce Pethrick with us today. Bruce is one of my amazing colleagues at Autism Canada. He is an autistic advocate, he's an educator, and he's a father to two neurodivergent kids. He has recently moved to BC, where he lives near the ocean now, the lucky guy. And so if you hear seagulls in the background, that's why. He's also an incredible musician, and you can learn more about his music and about Bruce at his website, brucepethrick.com. We also have Kara Diamond with us tonight. Kara is truly an honorary Autism Canada team member. She's not official, but she's honorary. She has been with us for a couple of years now, helping us with a lot of these events and webinars and doing things in the background. So Kara is a late diagnosed autistic advocate as well. She's the author of the book, The Autism Lens, which I highly recommend. And she's a teacher to autistic children here in Toronto and a teacher instructor at OISE, the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education, where she shares her gifts with new teachers. She also hosts a great podcast called Autistic Tidbits and Tangents that you can that I will provide a link to tomorrow in my follow-up email. And you can learn more about Kara and her work at karadiamond.com. I highly recommend you check out her website. She's got tons of resources and a lot of really great information, particularly from an educator point of view. So that's Kara. And then last but not least is Dominique Chabot, who is one of my very favorite colleagues and our family services manager at Autism Canada. She is a parent to two boys on the autism spectrum. And so she has been going through the back to school routine and rigmarole just like the rest of us have. And she also has tons of experience with IEPs and IPRCs. So she is a great resource from a parent perspective this evening. So that is the panel. Again, I'm Julie. I'm going to But at this point, I'm going to throw it over to the panel and they're going to get the conversation started. Just don't forget, if you have questions, throw them in the chat and we will get to them. And over to you guys.
So just because we did this last year and we had a very big structure, and I think, but the first thing I'd like to ask is there anybody listening that doesn't know what an IPP is or what the procedure is? I think let's start at that.
An IPP is the same as an IEP, right? P, just IPP, yes, is BC in Alberta. Yeah.
And also the SLRC is a new acronym I came across.
So Andrea says she doesn't know and she's very new to all of this. So she would love to know more. Let's start there.
How do you want to start? IEP,
yeah, I have a little list. An IEP is an individualized education plan. In other provinces, the acronym is, what does it stand for, Bruce, where you are?
IPP is individual personal plan. In the Catholic board in Calgary, it's now SLPC. I never worked it out. Anyway, sorry.
So they have different names, but basically it's a document that describes why the child who the document refers to is getting some additional learning supports. So it would identify their placement, whether they are in the classroom all the time, whether they have withdrawal support some of the time or completely. It would identify their strengths and needs, the reason for developing the document. It would also list instructional, environmental, and assessment accommodations that your child can always access. And in some cases, it would also have subject modifications or an alternative program goals. So alternative program goals are things like if your child is working on self-regulation or social skills, they might have a section that specifically addresses those pieces of information that aren't taught in the curriculum. And then it also lists things like the human resources, so the people who are involved in working with your child, the transition plan, which could include just subject-to-subject transitions in the classroom, or, for instance, classroom-to-classroom if your child goes to different rooms, or, you know, school-to-school if they're going to be transitioning to another school.
And it's important to note, and I think this is something that all parents need to know, that this is a collaborative document, which means that it's not the school making this up. It's the school suggesting with parental input and really important student input. And then all three parties then need to agree on that. So a lot of parents will come and say, well, the school's implemented this, this, and this, and didn't agree with it. They can't implement something without your agreement. And if they do, you need to start asking questions. And it's also super important that the child, if they're able to be part of this. And I would even encourage, and Cara, I'm not going to speak for you, but I know you're going to pipe in and say this, even at the grade one level, get this, or at a level where your cats are involved, it doesn't matter. Always, the student should be involved so that they're aware.
What? So there's a question here about A, is it different for each province? And B, what grade would this document be generated in? What grade did they start doing IEPs or IPPs? I think each province does have a version of an IPP, right? Or an IEP. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's basically an individualized learning plan, right? Which is specific to your child.
I think I've heard that people have them at a preschool. Does anyone else have experience with that?
No.
So, okay, if the child is coming into the school board and they already have an identification and that documentation is shared with the school and you go through the identification, placement, and review committee meeting, once a child has a recognized identification by the school board, they have to have an IEP and transition plan. So you can have them in kindergarten, for instance, but I would say in general, you know, sometimes it takes time to notice that learning is developing differently in different children. And so it tends to be more common that they come in place in grade 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question, Aman? Give us a thumbs up if it does, I guess. So why don't we, this is a good one. And now I'm going to talk. can we, before we get to that, should we talk a bit through the process, like how you get to that? Is it basically just you come to the school, you have a designation, your child is designated or has been assessed to have or to be autistic, and you go to the school and say, my child is autistic, here's the documentation, now what? Is that sort of what you do?
Yeah, you can, as a parent, you can make a written request, and you are supposed to hear back within 15 days an approximate date of when the meeting will take place. So you should hear back within about 2 weeks. Okay, we can meet to discuss these concerns. And they will usually also provide that particular school board's processes. So the most school boards have a guidebook that kind of talks you through how special education works in that board and what your rights are as parents as well. So they should also share that document with you.
And when you talk about that meeting, is that an IPRC meeting, which is the placement meeting, or no? What, how to define it?
Identification, placement, and review committee meeting.
Right.
And this meeting, so this is a committee that meets, and there are sort of the three different types of meetings. There's the identification meeting where all the documentation has been reviewed by a school board psychologist, and they say yes, they meet the criteria. So in our board, they will be identified this way. Then another type of meeting, and sometimes you can combine the meetings, but another type is placement, where perhaps the school will offer your family a program that is suitable for your child, or they think is suitable, and you have a discussion about that. And then yearly, you should be reviewing the placement and also the IEP document, though you can waive your right to the yearly meeting.
And you would do that on an annual basis, waive the right on an annual basis. You wouldn't do it at the very beginning. Okay. So just to summarize, your child has been assessed. You written request via an email. If your email is okay to the school to say, my child is autistic, we want to have a meeting to find out what kind of accommodations and things you can provide. Okay.
And I would email the principal that.
Right. Okay. So let's answer this question about publicly and private schools with respect to the legal, because IEPs and IPPs are legal documents that the school has to adhere to.
If I may, I definitely know the law in both Alberta and British Columbia, and it is a legal requirement whether it's a public or a private funded school. In other words, any school that has accreditation through an Alberta Education and BC Education, which is the government departments that are the overarching education department, that is a legal requirement. It is a law in those provinces. I'll let Dominique and Cara, and it's the same for Catholic boards as well, I know for a fact for Alberta and BC, I will let people in Ontario respond to Ontario.
I believe that is also the case in Ontario. You know, we are governed by the Education Act, which applies to all schools. And it is the same for the Catholic Board, same process, relatively. Yeah.
Dominique, can you answer for Quebec?
Oh, Quebec is unique, but essentially the same applies. The only difference with Quebec is that you're dealing with, is there anyone in Quebec here? If we have anyone who has questions about Quebec, some of the rules are slightly different. So essentially when you're dealing with a CLSC, you're focused on that specific region, and whether it's a public school or Catholic school, private school, everything needs to be filtered through the CLSC. And the CLSC is basically that regional health department that should have access to like whether it's a library or documents on all of those who are under the age of 18 with a disability that are coded for the schools. So everything kind of needs to be filtered through them, but essentially it's the same process. It's just a lot more red tape, if you know what I mean.
Fundamentally, it's a legal.
It is.
It's a legal requirement. I know it's across Canada, but I can only speak for those two provinces that I'm really aware of.
Some provinces are much more lax, or maybe uneducated, or not as enforced, and some provinces are just way too much red tape. So it depends on where you are, but essentially, as a whole, it should be consistent across the board.
So I have a private school situation, which I was talking to Kara about last week. My youngest is actually in a small independent school right now. And they do what's called an ILP, which is an independent learning plan. And they told me last week, and this is something I need to investigate, that is not, because I'm thinking about transferring him to public next year in grade 9, it is not transferable. It will be in his file, but as an IEP, it's not transferable. So I'm trying to figure that out because I want to make sure he goes into grade 9 with an official IEP, because he has, although I don't, I guess my yeah. Anyway, so that's something that I'm trying to work out. So probably best to ask your private school what their
transition
plan is and how they transfer that information if you're thinking about moving to a public school.
So I've just moved province, and we've just had some documentation from the school saying they're not transferring my children's IEPs directly. Because it's a different system. It's a different education system. There's different documents. But fundamentally, they're taking what the plans have been and they're going to be modifying it to the BC plan. That's the general. These should be transferable. It just, as Dominic said, sometimes the red tape is a little in the way, but it should still be transferable.
Sorry, go ahead, Kara.
I was just going to address the question in the chat from Aman. So in Ontario, so that's the province that I work in, every student has a file folder with a whole bunch of documents, and it's called an Ontario student record. So that file folder, which would include IEPs and report cards and other documentation, that file folder does follow them school to school, including elementary to high school. And so if they have been identified as exceptional, they will have an IEP every year. So it's a new document every year, but it kind of builds on the previous years, and it is typically updated twice a year.
A quick question about that, which I totally forgot. Is the OSR only for publicly funded schools? It's not, is it? Yes.
I'm not sure.
That's
one I don't know about.
I think it is, because I feel like I shouldn't say I think, but it's a great question. I don't know the answer to that one, Candace. I think that I have to re-register my son if I want to put him back in public. When I find out, though, I'd be happy to share that information somehow. I'm going through all of that right now. With respect to the IP, so let's just go through the steps. So I've submitted to my school, my child is on the spectrum. I would like to have the meeting. I send my request in and I'm given a date and a time for my meeting. Can I bring maybe the psychologist that my child works with, or my, a mentor or a professional like Kara, to my meeting with me, or Dom or Bruce, any of you, to my meeting with me? Can I bring whoever I want to my meeting to help? Because it's a pretty rigorous process, right? Like, the forms are long. There's a lot of things to fill out. There's a lot of different options that you may not know. So is that an option?
Yes, certainly can. I would give the school a heads up someone's coming, but that is completely your right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you can bring someone with you. Okay, Sue, I'm just seeing your comment here. Thank you. Okay, so a TIPP, a T-I-P-P, which I guess is a preschool IEP, and now they're using that to develop the IEP in kindergarten. That's great. That's great. Yeah, so it is following. Super. And I do know that the private school will share any of the information if the child, my child's school will transfer any of the information with him to the other school. So he will, all of that information will go with him. It's just that he doesn't have a formal IEP. So I'm not sure how that plays out yet. Kara, you're frozen, I think. Kara? We've lost Kara. I'm sorry. She's probably talking to us. Let's see if I can send her a note.
I can answer Candace, though. She just posted a question in the chat. So Candace,
Do you want to unmute? Should we start unmuting people and ask, actually doing it that way?
No, I can either way.
Okay, I'm going to unmute you, Candace, so you can.
If you need to answer me, or if you have elaborate
there questions. There we go.
Essentially, we do not at this present time, Candace, but I'm going to do a little PSA for Kara. So Kara has on her website, she's got like a toolkit and so much information about IEPs. And I strongly recommend that you go and check out what Kara has before anything else, because her model is exceptional. And I sat in on a SEAC committee, which we'll talk about later, but a SEAC committee board presentation, and they developed this toolkit for parents to really understand and know how to dissect the IEP to really, you know, to get a handle on it, because some of the language can be really complex. And you know, Kara's got similar examples on her website as well. We do want to kind of create like a universal IEP template, but I mean, and we, you know, we're looking at doing something where it kind of defines and breaks down what the average IPRC or IEP or IPP would look like, and just so, you know, for parents to better understand. But like I said, Kara's got a lot of really good information on her website that I would recommend you check out.
And you have to be careful about, there isn't a model IEP, because there isn't, each province has a different way of describing each implementation. So it always will be it'll be a model rather than an exact copy of something, which is a pity.
Benjamin, do you want to go ahead and ask your question? Kara is trying to get back to us. She had a crash, but you go ahead, Benjamin. I know you put it in the chat, but since we're chatting here, you might as well go live.
Yeah. I am just wondering hi. Yeah. Benjamin's mom here. Just wondering if there is any reason that I should pursue an IEP if my son is said to be doing well. I don't pick him up or drop him off. He takes the bus to school. So I get very, very limited information. But I've also heard, you know, he's doing well in other settings, but, you know, through conversation, we get very little information. But I think that there could be some accommodations made to just support him anyway, because doing well doesn't mean he's doing as well as he could be doing. So any insight in that area would be super helpful.
Bruce is jumping out of his skin.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so excited for this answer.
Yeah, definitely pursue the IEP.
Yeah.
What's really super important about IEPs is that any student that's coded, any student that has an exceptionality, any student that has a different learning ability has a right to these IEPs now. They don't have to actually be used. They don't have to be actively used all the time. But what's super important is if your child, sorry, I couldn't, son.
Yeah, no, son.
Son?
Yeah.
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 If your son starts to struggle with anything, the IEP can click in and all those supports are there for them. Now, they may not need them, but having them in the background always available is super, super important.
It's also
yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, it's going to open lines of communication with the teachers as well. It's going to force you to meet with them and to discuss your son's progress. So I would recommend that you, I agree with you, Bruce, 100%, because if you don't, it might be more difficult down the road, you see. So if you give it a year or two as your child gets older, and his, you know, whether his marks start to slip and he starts to express that he's struggling with the, you know, with certain subjects and some anxiety or whatever the case is, without having that IEP in place, it's going to be hard to kind of get it going as he gets older. So I would recommend that the sooner you get this implemented, the better.
Okay, it's also super important to realize, and this is very much an autistic perspective. And I think Kara did as well. I did really, really, really well at school, like really well at school. But I masked a lot of the time. I was not being honest with myself. I wasn't being honest with my parents. I wasn't being honest with my teachers. There was a certain aspects of my school life that I struggled with. And I think having that IEP in the background would have given me a lot more a safety net to even just for myself to be a little bit more honest and saying, you know what, I need to take an extra half an hour for these exams, these tests. And rather than push myself, I would have liked to have had that ability to be honest with myself and to take the time.
And the sooner we can get students feeling comfortable self-advocating, the better. So I think, you know, the earlier that students have this knowledge that they have these rights, that these are things that they are entitled to, that can really help them, and that there's nothing wrong with them, the better. I find students who are a little bit older, like once you get to high school, if you wait that long, sometimes they can feel a lot more of the pull to fit in with peers all the time. They don't want to look different. And it becomes even more of a challenge to instill some of those and give them the opportunity to practice those skills.
I would agree. My son got an IEP in grade 9, and he's really not that interested in advocating right now. You know, had he had that stuff from the beginning, he would be comfortable with it. Does that answer your question, Katrina? Are you good?
It does. Thank you.
Okay, great. So I'm going to move on here to Shannon. Shannon, do you want to unmute? And you can.
Hi there. Yeah. Can everyone hear me?
Yep.
Yep.
I just wanted to make a comment, yeah, about the IEP and the IRPC. So my son was, he was diagnosed at age 9. So that was, I think, at the end of grade 3. And at that point, before he was diagnosed, I was ready to pull him from the school because they were calling me every day. Every day was a problem, and challenging behavior and verbal diarrhea. And I actually, autism wasn't even on my radar. I just thought he was being a challenging 9-year-old little bugger. So when that diagnosis came out, we're like, okay, well, we'll give the school a chance to, you know, put some supports in place. And we went along pretty good. And then COVID hit, and then we're home with virtual and did no schoolwork, you know, and I was at a lot, we chose not to tell him, because we were seeing a lot of the behavior at school and not at home. So at school, that's, you know, sensory overload. So he has sensory processing disorder, anxiety, and a general learning disability. So we decided not to tell him, but over the past 2 years, things have gotten a little bit worse at school in the learning center and going to the classroom. And he's been targeted throughout his whole school year with being bullied. And I just think it's been a bad label all around. And then in the end, the schools just, I know, don't want to deal with them, and called me every day to pick them up. And that's sending, you know, me into an emotional turmoil. So at the end of grade 6, they had the ASD. So he's had an IEP for a few years. And to be honest, I haven't really paid much attention to it. And I haven't really, you know, when he got the diagnosis, I got this full page of resources to look into and to do this. And it was information overload. And I just thought I would kind of wait it out and age and stage. And so the ASD consultants from the board came and monitored him, and they said, you know, he'd really benefit from a social skills, the county social skills class, not the ASD class, because he is, I always say high functioning, but I think it's termed low functioning. Like, he's level one. He's, you know, very verbal and black and white and very direct and no filter. But he does have the social communication. And so they sent, point of my story is he got, we had meetings at the end of the school year, three meetings on Zoom. He went for two visits at the school. We're in day five. So it's a social skills class. And they said, you know, we'll work on, you guys are probably aware of that type of classroom, working on the social skills and how to socially respond. And, you know, what's the appropriate response? And when he's poked, it's, you know, swearing comes out and all of this other jargon. So today's day five, I guess, with the weekend. Yesterday they called me and said, you need to come and pick him up. I said, I'm not coming to pick him up. And that's the first time I've really stood my ground. And I said, I was in Vaughan. And I said, I'm not coming to pick him up. And they said, he's got his backpack on and he's pacing and he's not doing any work and he's swearing at us and he's telling us that he hates us and this and that. And I'm like, he's at a social skills class. That's why he's there. That's what you're there for. So I ended up texting the old principal and I said, you know, I don't want to assume, but I do assume that, like, they read through his file and everything. And when I spoke to him today, he said, oh, his file's on my desk. They haven't. So here's this kid who started. Yeah. These people who are, you know, the CERT, these child and youth worker in the class and two EAs, this new kid that's coming in, met him twice, had a Zoom meeting with me twice, and have no idea what's in his file. No idea how to support him. No idea the breaks and the sensory and this and that and whatever. Like, I was literally dumbfounded. Yeah. So then I did go on to some supports, and that's how I came across this tonight. And, you know, I need to start getting better at advocating and really taking charge of what's happening in the school, because I just don't see that it's going very well.
It's so hard when it's a full-time job advocating.
Full-time job. Thankfully I work from home and I don't know how I could do it.
Yeah. It's not easy. Oh, interesting. Alana said your story could be hers. So, do you guys have any advice with respect to people who are changing schools, or any advice for Shannon with respect to getting that information out front? I mean, I know Kara probably has her, I know what she's going to say. Go ahead.
So boards move notoriously slow. There are procedures for how they transfer files. And so there's a lot of red tape. So things, they don't usually have the file folder at the start of the year. It might take a month or a bit more than a month. Hopefully very soon. One of the things for next time, because obviously now the year has started, but developing like a one pager or a letter from your child or some sort of document that just gives a quick overview of the needs and strategies that typically help, and sending that in with your child or emailing it directly to the principal and teacher before the start of the year can really help. I'm so sorry that happened to you and to your child, but yeah, it sounds like he definitely needs those breaks. This is a stress reaction, right? Oh, good. I'm so glad they have the file now.
Yeah, I think Kara has some great resources. We've talked about these in our last two sessions. Kara has some great resources on her website for kids. There are self-advocacy forms where kids can fill them out. It's a one page that they can then take into the teacher on the first or second day of school, as opposed to a parent sort of inundating with emails and things. These are great resources that you can work on with your child. They're for younger kids, they're for older kids, and they can be taken into the classroom to the teacher. So maybe even for next, when he goes to grade 8, Shannon, might be worthwhile to have something right on the first day. He's probably gonna be at the same school, but you never know, teachers change. Have a one pager that goes in on the first day with him that just he can pass to the teacher. Would that be helpful, Kara and Bruce, as teachers? Would that be helpful?
I would do it now, to be honest with you. Like, Shannon, this is this is really kind of heartbreaking, and let me wear two hats from like a parent perspective and a teacher's perspective. Let me talk about the teachers for a second. The start of the year, it kind of is horrible because you're just to say that, you know, everybody here knows that I mainly taught at the high school level. So, and I teach performing arts, so choir, music, theater. My first month, I might have 60 or 70 new students, even at the grade 10 level, that I'm interacting with in my first month. And the documentation doesn't always fall straight away, or you may have, what was it last year? I think there was 22 files on the music teacher's desk for a 40-member choir. And it's like, I didn't have the time in the first couple of weeks to read everybody's file, even though that's super important. It's just like, it's an overload. It's an overload from the teacher's perspective. Parents hat on, like, this is ridiculous. Teachers need to read the documentation. Like, so it's a horrible situation. Kara's self-advocacy resource is fantastic. And patience. And please, patience for everybody for the first month, and then go for it.
Yeah. I think the to me, the frustration is the, and we've talked about this, the panel, about the come and pick your child up. Come and pick your child up. We've talked about this, and I'm not sure that we have the answer to that one. That is really tricky, really tricky. And especially in a social skills, you're absolutely right to do what you did. You're absolutely right to do what you did.
Yeah. It's not supposed to happen. They're not supposed to send kids home, but it does happen, unfortunately. And I, you know, it's a sign that schools need to figure out ways they can tweak the environment and tweak what they're asking of children.
Yeah. Shannon, does that help?
Okay. Yes. You know, I picked him up a lot over the years because I felt he's probably better mentally at home than he is there. It's just a constant, you know, battle while he's there. But it's just so intriguing and funny sometimes that as bad as the day is, you know, the next day he gets up, he gets dressed in his regular clothes, eats the same cereal, and off he goes. Have a great day. We have the same, you know, verbiage, and away he goes, and it's, you know, much of the same again. But, you know, I just told him in the spring that he is on the spectrum, and, you know, being 12 and hormonal, and, you know, in the types of kids groups that he is, everybody throws around, like, he'll say to me, oh, you're autistic. They have no idea what it means. And so trying to explain to him, I'm still torn. I don't want to make it out that that's all who he is, but also trying to have him identify that some of this behavior is coming from that. So the fact that he's gone to this county classroom, so when I refused to pick him up, it was the principal who called me. She said, we're having a meeting on Thursday to go over the goals of it's a new principal. It wasn't the same principal at the end of the year that I met with. And that kind of took me back, because I thought the ASD consultants from the board put in the recommendations that my kid go to this classroom. It's been day five. It's huge on transitions, new school, new busing, new kids, new teachers, new rules. You already want me to pick him up. Like, how are you teaching him anything? I thought that was the point of the classroom.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Mm-hmm. Take a small positive about everything you just said there. The most positive thing you said is that your son's getting up and wants to go to school again.
Every day.
Yeah, and like, that's, you know what?
I know. If he caused me grief in the morning, I don't know. That would, yeah, it's just amazing that.
That is amazing. I had a school refuser. Believe me, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky. Okay, we've got a few more questions here. So if you're good, Shannon, if you have anything else, though, just definitely let us know as we go through
thank
here.
Thank you.
Sure. I'm going to go now to Natalie. I'm going to ask Natalie to unmute. I think we'll just do this way because we seem to have more questions at this point. So Natalie, do you want to go ahead and ask your question or?
Yeah, sure. That'd be great. Thanks. So my son has had an IEP since grade three. He was previously diagnosed ADHD with learning disabilities. And then this summer, he just has a new diagnosis of ASD with severe anxiety on top of the ADHD and the LD and a bit of depression too, just for good measure. So he has an old IEP, and on the new psychoeducational report, the psychologist has a whole list of recommendations for him to be successful. He's now in grade nine. And I'm waiting for the school to acknowledge the new assessment that I've sent in. What are my son's rights or like to get more put into his IEP? Am I making sense?
Yes, you are. And what province are you in?
Ontario.
Okay, great. That's my zone. So you can email the principal and request an IPRC and just say like, has the board reviewed these forms? They should be putting that in place so they can give you a timeline.
Okay.
I would do that. With an IEP, now that you have new information, they should be updating the strengths and needs profile. Uh-huh. And then of course that will also influence what are the appropriate accommodations, what are the appropriate subject or alternative subject, either modifications if there are any, or program goals if it's an alternative. So that new information should definitely inform what happens next.
Okay.
Again, though, it's collaboration. And there's a couple of times I've had some responses about people, what are my rights? And this is where it's a little tricky. There has to be some reality about what a school can provide in general for your son specifically. And so when you're going into these meetings, feel free to shoot for the moon, but also understand that sometimes a list of accommodations can't be somebody help me out here. It's like sometimes we can ask for too much and then for nothing gets done.
Yeah, sometimes it can like burn the bridges almost.
Yeah. Please don't take this as your son doesn't have any rights or you don't have any rights, but it's also, it's a collaborative document. So be ready to collaborate.
I think what you're trying to say is, you know, the teacher or the environment isn't always open necessarily, that's not the right word, but there isn't the capability for certain accommodations, but there are lots of accommodations that can be listed and hopefully used. It just depends on the environment in some cases. Am I getting that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would say like, this is actually the perfect situation because you have new documentation. So it is important to sit down and review it and make sure that everyone is on the same page and that the goals are now appropriate for your child in light of this new information. So I think it's also the tone with which we approach the schools and that kind of, you know, we all want to help support this child as best we can. I want the best for my child. I know that you all want to support my child to the best of your ability as well. And let's make sure we have all of our eyes on the same prize.
That help, Natalie?
Yeah, it does. And I appreciate you reminding me about that it's collaborative and I know the teachers all want the students to be successful. So I know that. And I realize that it's the whole system is strained. And so I get all that.
And you know what, like going in with that tone and, you know, thanking the teachers when they are doing something great, like they will really appreciate that you notice the things that they are doing well.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm gonna go to Andrea now. Andrea, here you go. I'm gonna ask you to unmute. So Andrea has a question here about diagnoses for IEPs. You wanna go ahead, Andrea?
Sure. So I have two little ones. My older son, who's starting grade one, is not diagnosed with anything, but has been basically in occupational therapy for over a year for sensory-related challenges. My little one is starting JK, and he hasn't received a diagnosis yet, but is in the process of being screened and hopefully eventually diagnosed with being on the spectrum. In my opinion, I think both of them will need an IEP. I know Max, my younger one, will, because he will have a diagnosis, but I'm wondering what might be the case for my older one who does not have a diagnosis. How will the pathway of how each of them are supported, how might it be different if one has a diagnosis for their needs and one does not?
Oh, that's a great question. So here in Ontario, you can have an informal IEP. That would be something that the school would, if they saw that there were learning needs. Often it happens when students are, when teachers and the committee has recommended to the family, let's get an assessment, they'll put an informal IEP in place in the meantime, once everyone agrees that there are needs. And actually in Ontario, it's just less than 50% of students who are receiving special education services are on these informal IEPs. So it can be developed by a teacher. It can be developed, like you can talk to the principal and say, is there any chance of getting an IEP? Although I don't have an identification yet, this is what I do have. If you have any reports from the occupational therapist, that would probably go a long way. Dom, you're nodding about that. So it is definitely worth asking. And that is something that, you know, you're putting in place in advance of potentially, a more formal identification to follow down the road.
Is an informal IEP as binding as a, no, okay. It
well, is? Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. Here, what is different is you don't actually need the IPRC process. So it could be if a teacher is noticing a lot of learning needs and there have been assessments and at the school level, not like a psychoeducational assessment, but maybe the special education teachers consulted a little bit, it can be put in place, but it is on the legal forms. It is then a legal document.
So then my recommendation would be to get that as early as possible, because as your child gets older, the school may not be as inclined to write an IEP. For instance, I know that in high school, kids that have ADD, it's hard for them to get IEPs, but in elementary school, it's a little bit easier. And if you get the IEP in elementary, it follows them to high school. So that would be, in my experience, that is truth. So yeah. Okay. Does that help, Andrea?
Yes. Thank you. And thanks for the tip for getting IEPs early. He's an OT basically so we can avoid a crisis in school. It looks like the IEP will do the same thing, that we shouldn't necessarily wait for there to be major concerns to take initiative on it.
Yeah, so if they're offering it, I would take it.
Thanks. Okay, thanks.
Okay, so we're going to go to Candace's comment here. Oh my goodness, what's my computer doing? Yes. Candace's husband is a high school English teacher in the public system. He has 99 students in 3 classes. Candace, you must be in Ontario. And at least 1/3 have IEPs. Bruce is right. Teachers are overwhelmed, but as parents, we need to push as the squeaky wheels get the oil. That is true. The system is seriously flawed and kids are suffering because of it. Yeah, I would agree.
I'm saying is give it a month and then full on.
Yeah, for sure. And do that one pager. Do that one pager so you sort of get to the top of the queue as well. Candace. Okay, great. Yeah, she asked a psychologist for a script for how to approach things with her son. Oh, you're talking about disclosure. Okay, yes, great topic. Disclosing what age, how, and all of that. We can certainly talk about that.
What an interesting topic, Kara.
Yeah, no kidding. Tell us about that, Kara.
I just wrote a blog post all on how to do this and things that you can say and different resources you can use. One caveat with the resources, I always preview, see what works for you and your child. You want whatever, whether it's a picture book or it's a video, you want it to be age appropriate. You want your child to be able to see themselves in the video so they can relate in some way. But I have lots of tips on this on my website now.
Soon to be a book.
Yeah, Bruce keeps telling me it has to be a book.
Is some of this, no, I guess because your first book is written for teachers, so the IPRC and IEP process isn't in your first book. I would suggest as well that if you have questions about these kinds of things after we get off this call, Dom and Bruce are our amazing family support team at Autism Canada, and they can also answer questions outside of this. And Kara is great. She will provide her email address and will also answer your questions. So while we're here, and we don't have a huge agenda tonight because we really wanted to open it up for everyone to ask their questions. There are opportunities to ask more questions afterwards. Does anybody else have a question now, or is there anything from the panel that we want to add here? I mean, IEP is such a big topic and I think we've covered a lot of things,
just came to my top of my head. One of the things I know that we, when we talk about this questions that came through, is that my microphone just did something really weird. We need to talk about the timeline, and we've talked about this is what should happen. The IEP should be done by this point. What happens if an IEP is not done by that point?
I mean, principals are pretty on it in public schools in Ontario. Like, it's legally supposed to be done 30 days after the start of school. 30 like working days. So yes, not including the weekends. So in my school board, it is October 20th. A first draft should be going home for parent review. And there's a back page where you can write your comments and things and send that back. And it's a draft. So no, it's always a working document. They might do another draft after considering your feedback after, you know, if you want to meet and talk about it, they might do another draft. Principals are pretty strict about the deadline. So I've never seen them not done on time in the schools that I have worked in.
Parents should be expecting to get that call. If they've asked for a meeting, they should be expecting to get an IPRC call in the next couple of weeks then.
So what the school is required to do is 2 weeks after you ask to meet, they will give you an approximate timeline of when they will meet. So when you meet to discuss, it might be different, but you can also just ask to speak to the teacher after you get the IEP and just, you know, it's completely reasonable to talk it through and say, you know, I just didn't understand what this meant, or you call and ask those questions. Don't feel bad about that. And if you are meeting to discuss the IEP as a group, if it's possible, have your child there as well to advocate and make sure that, you know, I always tell teachers, make sure you're talking about the strengths and using the strengths to write the IEP goals. You know, sometimes we have a student who, for instance, maybe they're really chatty all the time, but they're not so good in group work. Why not write into the goals? They can use their strong social skills to self-advocate in groups by, you know, agreeing on their role or whatever. But like the goal, when you read the goal, you want to make sure that you understand what it means and your child understands what it means, and you can tell what success looks like. I really hate ambiguous goals where, yes, you know, it says something. Sorry, be professional. Okay. It says something like, you know, the child will answer in a respectful tone. Well, what's a respectful tone? And that's very subjective. And, you know, we have to make sure that our goals are also neurodivergent friendly.
My daughter had, she had, will improve her social skills. And it's like, what? And then there's also, how are we going to judge it? And so we may be playing this up as from a panel perspective, but also, look, this is really super important for the parent, for you as a parent, if people as a parent, is that when you see these IEPs that have goals, ask, how is the goal measured? How is it, how is my student, how is my child going to know that they've achieved those goals that they've been set out? That's, otherwise it's like, nobody knows what's going on. And the most important person, the student, doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I know I've told you guys this story before, but my youngest had a teacher that told him to work on his emotional regulation. Oh, he has ADD. So, you know, he doesn't have emotional regulation. Doesn't exist. Okay. So with regards to the timeline, Katrina's just asking, should we automatically get an IEP by mid-October if we send the diagnosis to the school?
Okay. No. Okay. If they are already identified, yes. If they have not gone through the initial IPRC process, so where the board gets the paperwork, you have a meeting to discuss that the board has accepted this diagnosis, it probably will not be initiated until that happens.
Typically, that would happen in the spring, right? Like, let's say for the average student, I know that for my two kids, the IPRC usually happens in the spring to talk about what's going to take place in the fall.
So you're talking about the review portion. So the initial identification meeting can take place anytime.
Right. Of course.
Children get paperwork in from medical professionals all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So that initial meeting is what needs to take place for the next step in most cases, unless the school has already talked to you and they've also seen needs, and then they might do the informal IEP.
So I'm just going to let Katrina unmute for a second, because let's talk a bit more about timing here. Okay. Katrina, if you want to unmute, have you sent the paperwork in already?
No, I haven't sent the diagnosis and it hasn't been requested. So I'm just trying to, like Bruce said, like give everything a month and not be like, okay, where's my IEP? Where's my IPRC? Here's all these documents. Like,
would you wait a month for that?
I would send the document in. What I was talking about is, once all the documentation's in, give it some time once the documentation's there. That's what I meant by the month. I apologize if I wasn't clear. So if you've got the documentation, send it in straight away. Get it in there. Start the process.
Get in the list.
And would I be sending that to the cert, or should I send that to the principal or send it to the teacher?
Why not just CC all three? But the principal for sure is the one that you want to get that first. But I think sharing it with, if you're comfortable sharing it with the cert and the teacher, why not?
So I would just share it and then wait and see if they tell me about an IPRC, or should I share it and say we would like to request an IPRC at the same time?
Yes, do that.
Okay.
Yeah, ask for what you want for sure. Okay, and then Iman, I'm going to unmute Iman here. I'm going to ask you to unmute if I can find you. Hang on 1 second. Here we go. Okay, Iman, do you want to go ahead and ask your question as well? Sorry, I think I just muted you when you unmuted. So if you could unmute again. Hello, Iman? The question is, with respect to the IPRC, and when you say the board has to accept the diagnosis, what does this mean?
School boards have procedures. So if they get paperwork in, like, you know, a psychoeducational report from, let's say, Holland Bloorview Hospital, the school board psychologists have to review the document. And then you have a meeting where they say, yes, this child has been identified as exceptional. So it's like just like a red tape thing. But it is an essential step in getting support.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you so much.
No problem.
And then Evalia, I hope I'm saying all your names right, and I apologize if I'm not, but I'm going to ask Evalia to unmute and she can ask her question. She's got her hand up here. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, this is my first experience with IPPs. I just moved to Calgary. And I would like to know, do you know where I can find models that something that was already done? Because I don't have any idea what should be included on that document.
Bruce can probably talk to this having worked in that area, but the school will write the initial IEP based on what they know to generally be effective for the student and for students with that particular learning profile. So then you are reading it over and seeing, does this make sense for my child?
Yeah, it'll come from the school in itself, because the other thing to recognize is that the IEP, this year's IEP is to do with this year's teachers. And this year's teachers may have strengths and weaknesses in ways that will be modified as they go on. So it's I understand your question, and I'm not too sure, even if I could give you 10 models of ones, because the models will be different for every school, the way that they're implemented. One of the things to look at is when you're going into this discussion, think about what are the strengths and weaknesses of your child, and see how those strengths and weaknesses are being looked at in the IEP.
Okay. I gave them already all the documentation, like diagnosis. I had a meeting with the assistant of the principal.
Mm-hmm.
I did not talk with the teacher directly, but I just don't know. you talk about the deadline, the date, and I guess 1 month, it's something that we can consider fair.
And I would be, especially since this is your first experience, email the teacher in a week or two saying that this is a new procedure for you, and asking for what they are, maybe asking what their ideas are or what the direction is, or if they can give you some guidance. Having this dialogue with the teacher will be a preliminary dialogue, or it's a parallel dialogue. In other words, it's not to do with the IEP, but also making a connection with the teacher saying, my child is exceptional in a certain way, and this is a new process for me. Can you help me?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your question. That's great. Candace, I'm going to unmute you because this is a big one. Okay.
I got myself unmuted.
There you go. Perfect. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we got my son's psychoeducational results on August 24th, and he's in a private Montessori school. He's just started grade two. And we shared with the school and met with the teacher and the principal like very quickly. They were very responsive, largely because they knew that we were going this route. They were supportive of it. So they asked me to give the new teacher 2 weeks to experience and observe him. Before we have another discussion. And I'm just not sure how eager I should be, because unfortunately she was away last week because she had COVID, you know, to complicate matters. We're living in COVID time still. And so, but at the same time, I already see his behavior deteriorating. Like today he left school using the "I hate language. I hate school. I hate language. I hate math. I hate being there. I hate it." And it breaks your heart. And I tried to drill down when he calmed down to figure out what was going on. And it was a language assignment, and he felt stressed and rushed, and it was timed. And they did it in the afternoon. And of course, with everything he's got going on in the afternoon, is not a time to engage him in anything like that. Should I leave it? I was tempted to write a letter to the teacher tonight just saying, hey, can you tell me what happened during this afternoon class activity, you know, just to sort of feather out where the truth lies between his, I'm not implying he's lying. He's 6 and a half. He loses details and he blurs details, and, yeah. You know, But I want to know what happened and maybe if there's some lessons learned in preventing that. But am I being too eager, Bruce? Because she did ask for a window of time to get to know him.
Kara, you're nodding. You go ahead. You've got the passion on this one.
Yes. So, I don't think now's the time to say, let's talk about the IEP, but I think it's important to send an email or ask to talk to the teacher on the phone and say, you know, my son was really upset at the end of the day, and I'm wondering if we can put some breaks in place. I'd also love to hear your perspective. This is what I got from him, but sometimes I don't get the whole story. So I'd appreciate your perspective. Like, see if you can ask to put some immediate strategies in place so that he's not coming home. And honestly, if you sent me an email like this and you said that he's coming home saying he hates school, I, as a teacher, definitely want to help rectify that immediately.
She may not be, the teacher may not be experiencing that behavior. It may just be when he's leaving. So just informing her about just informing the teacher about that response would be important, I would think too, right?
Yeah. When I was picking him up, it's a micro school. So it's a small community. And she said, well, he had a very rough afternoon. He didn't want to work. And seems to be in a bad mindset. And I said, well, of course he is. If you're trying to make him work at something that he finds challenging in the afternoon, you're not going to get the best out of him. And the teacher who had him last year looked at her and she said, absolutely. If you want him to do his best work, you got to catch him first thing in the morning. So, but I just don't know how aggressive to be like around the IEP, because it's a private school. And I said, well, we need to do an IEP. And they're like, well, let's get to know him first and see. And I'm like, you guys have had a year with him already. You know him. It's just the new teacher doesn't know him.
Yeah, I would definitely follow up after she's been there for another week or so.
Yeah.
And just say, you know, when can we discuss this, or, you know, is this being done? But I would go into immediate problem solving mode in this situation and just say, I'm wondering what we can put in place. You know, in the afternoons, that tends to be tough. Here is what has worked with him in the past, but I'm open to your ideas. Like, you want to definitely make it sound like you're collaborating and you're asking things as questions to the teacher.
Excellent. Yeah. On my way out, I said to her, I said, at home, we find in the afternoons getting him to do quiet activities like reading on his own and artistic projects and things that tends to really resonate with him. Whereas if you want him to do math or time tests or anything, it's best to do that in the morning. So
timed tests.
I shake my head. I know. She had him doing a 10-minute language test, and I'm like, okay, that won't work for him, but okay. Especially in the afternoon. Anyway, thank you all. I just want to balance being collaborative. My husband's a teacher, so I know how hard it is for all teachers right now with the pressures, especially in Ontario, and with COVID. I know how hard it is, and I get the privilege of seeing both sides, but I still want things to be better for my son. So
you're his best advocate.
One of the best things that you just said there was that another teacher piped in. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you've had the discussion. You've raised the issue, and that, you know, it'd be interesting just to see what happens in the next day or two. This may be a learning experience for the teacher.
Yeah.
In itself. But you've had a conversation with the teacher. I think that's the important thing. As Kara said, it's like, none of us want to hear, I hate.
Oh God, no, it breaks your heart.
And it breaks all three levels, the communities, the teacher and the parent. So it's like, that's an important thing to sort of say, okay, we need to, what's going on.
And that was in an area where it's the one area where he actually tests as exemplary. And if he's saying that about the area where he actually has a strength, God, what's going to happen when he starts struggling in the areas that he doesn't? That's my worry. Anyway, yeah. Thank you. I don't mean to hoard this. There's lots of people and lots of parents on here, I'm sure, that have questions. So thank you.
A lot of us experience the same thing. So every question that gets answered, I think, helps everybody. So don't worry.
But I'd be asking for more breaks for sure, because that's a sign he's having trouble coping by the end of the day, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
As a parent, I think you also want to make sure you address it immediately, because you don't want there to be any kind of a relationship You know, it's any kind of a relationship issue between the teacher and the child either. You want to make sure that, you know, for example, I do know that sometimes kids can be labeled as bad kids and or challenging kids. And you just want to nip that in the bud early, because sometimes teachers don't understand neurodivergency and exceptionalities. And so making sure that you get in there and explain that from the get-go can be super helpful, I think. I would also suggest that you ask his last year's teacher to speak to his new teacher, or vice versa, because you know, from a peer-to-peer standpoint, there may be some stuff to offer there as well, and from experience as a teacher.
Yeah, I did do that. I actually did it at the end of last school year, and they actually work very closely together. There's just the two teachers, so she does have the opportunity to assist in that regard. You know, Connor, he actually said to the teacher, which is, I think, a big red flag. He said to her, "I don't want to learn from you today. I don't trust you. And if I don't trust you, I'm not going to cooperate with you." That's what he said. He's six. You know,
yeah, I have one of those, Candace. I have one of those.
You know what?
And if he doesn't think that his teacher has his back, he is not interested. Absolutely not interested. Doesn't want anything to do with them. So that relationship is so important. And that, you know, I know.
I think it's incredible that Connor actually advocated for himself, because he is literally expressing his distrust. And it's not because I don't know if it's actually because he doesn't want to learn. It's just that it takes a while to build a relationship, and he's advocating for that piece. And that's young to be saying those words, but you need to look at that as his way of communicating and his way of saying, "I want to learn from you. I just need to trust you." So that time that we need to give the teachers to get to know your child needs to get to know their teachers.
Yeah.
And secondly, I think, I'm listening throughout this whole thing, and I'm thinking, and you know, although you've got these IEPs, and they essentially, you know, they go, you know, every year they're brought over to the next teacher, they make some modifications. I was in a position once upon a time where my son's IEP was a simple copy paste from the previous year. And this is before I really knew much about it. And I was fed up because the goals never changed. And he's in a spec ed. The goals never changed. You know, it was literally a copy paste for about 3 years in a row. And I was getting so upset and disappointed. And then I ended up stepping up to say, "Listen, my child changes. Sometimes it's a few times a year. Sometimes his mood, his hormones, his environment will impact how he learns." And he didn't know how to advocate for himself or communicate that. So obviously, as a parent, we had to do that. But if you can get your child involved from the get-go, and if you can encourage your son, Candace, to continue to advocate for himself, you know, maybe, you know, try to work with him as far as how to communicate that. But it's important that he pipes up, because in a lot of cases that never happened. And these kids are going to be stuck in this cycle, and they don't get to break out of it because no one's there to advocate for them.
Thank you, Dominique. That was excellent to hear, because I came away from that feeling very discouraged, and I never looked at it as advocating. I just looked at him being cheeky, you know. But the way you just explained it, it makes absolute sense to me, and it makes me actually very proud of him for feeling secure enough to articulate that. So thank you.
It's a big deal. Maybe Dom, do you think it would help for Candace's son for Connor to meet with his new teacher and his old teacher together, and maybe the old teacher could help him adjust, like, you know, just talk about, you know, his learning style and stuff in their relationship? I don't know. I wonder if
maybe. And again, I know that Kara has a really good some good documentation on her website that perhaps, you know, that sheet of paper that where Connor can actually use and advocate for himself and explain how he learns best, and whether that means that last year's teacher needs to step in and help advocate, you know, on his behalf. Who knows best but him? And, you know, they need to go through the motions to be able to, you know, give them the tools, and he'll navigate through it and he'll learn how. He just needs that little push. So instead of being told that he's cheeky, or and he probably is, you know, he's probably his communication's probably not like the best, but it's a sign of confidence that he knows exactly where he stands. And if he does not like this particular learning method, maybe it's because it's too hard for him. And it's important for him to communicate that. So whether it is by like having someone he trusts be part of that conversation, give him that option. Talk to his teacher and say, you know, is there someone at school that he's comfortable with that could kind of, you know, help advocate for him if I can't or if he can't, you know, maybe that's an option.
No, that's excellent. Thank you. The school is it's a micro school. They have grade 1 through 6 and there's 2 teachers and a total of 16 kids. So he actually gets a lot of face time. And there's also an educational assistant who does one-on-one work with them. And so one of the 2 teachers is from last year and the educational assistant is from last year. Where he seems to be struggling is he's got the new primary teacher and they've switched out like French and phys ed. It's all about stability, you know, that they keep making these changes and they think that the kids are just going to flow with it. And that's not always the case.
Well, it's not always the case and they won't flow with it. But what's important is that we continue to give them the tools to be able to learn how to navigate through these transitions. That's a small school. That's a very intimate setting. So there's going to be, he's not always going to have that luxury. He's going to end up in a bigger school down the road. So sometimes it's just really, it's important to have these conversations with him and say, you know, it's this is a really good opportunity for you to learn because it's a small and intimate location or school. But down the road, you're going to have more than one teacher in one day or, you know, just kind of set him up. So he's given the right tools to be able to navigate through some of these transitions.
Yeah. Yeah. Transitions are definitely a big one. Thank you. Thank you all. It was very helpful.
Shannon's made a comment here that her son hasn't felt any teacher has had his back, hence a lot of resistance at school. As verbal as he is, he can't speak his emotion. Shannon, did you want to elaborate on that at all? You can go ahead and unmute yourself if you do. That is tough, though. I know, like, I have a grade 8 and he's the same. He is, unless he knows someone has his back. And we actually took him out of public school and put him in a small independent. And so they have advisors there, which is great because he's had the same advisor and it's consistent and his teachers change, but it's like a guidance counselor, I guess, who he meets with a lot. And that's really helped him a lot just to have that consistent person.
That would be amazing if they had guidance counselors. Like I grew up going public school with one and just to have another sounding board, but I think it's amazing, Candace, your son being so young is able to verbally say that and speak his emotion. I think he's being, very direct and it is generating respect as well, because my son absolutely has never felt like any of the teachers have his back because of he's always been caught reacting to a behavior from someone else. And it's never, you know, I remember one time I went up and down him and took everything away because of something that happened, only for the principal to call me back in about an hour to say he was telling you the truth of what really happened. And so that was a little bit of an eye opener. And so after a few stories, you know, have come home or whatever, I thought I'm taking everything with a grain of salt with these, unfortunately, what these teachers tell me, because, you know, I wanted to send him to school with a GoPro. Because it's not, you know, you're getting half of the story. And when he'd say, I didn't say that. I didn't do this. I didn't. And, you know, they're interviewing other eight-year-olds or 9-year-olds for the story. Well, when there's already kind of that perception and you know, he's kind of known for that type of behavior or a reputation.
Kids get labeled.
The label and the reputation, you know, the truth isn't going to come out in his favor.
It's very tricky.
Very tricky.
To me, that's time for some collaborative problem solving, like Ross Green. Go to Ross Green's website. I say this all the time, but, you know, these behaviors that are being witnessed are actually a signal of an earlier problem. And that's what has to be problem solved. And Okay. As someone myself, I sometimes have trouble identifying my emotions in the moment. A lot of autistic people have this. It's called alexithymia. And so it's really hard to identify feelings and label feelings. And what might work even better is just talking to your son about, well, what do you want to happen? Or what would feel better? So instead of talking about feelings, you're talking about like what actual things, practical things would help you feel more comfortable or would help you in this situation. So just try and be like logical thinking about the problem as opposed to focusing on the feelings, which is harder and is, you know, an area of need. You might get a little bit further that way, and the teachers might get a little bit further that way.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions or anything else they'd like us to discuss at this point? Because it is almost 9 o'clock and we generally try and break off about 9 o'clock. Anybody want to throw their hand up or have anything else they want to ask? Any quick tips on how to get on the good side of principals or teachers who are overworked and overwhelmed so that they see a friendly, squeaky wheel instead of an annoying one when we need to speak up? Yeah. I know that there's a couple of people that have opinions on this. Yes.
Here's some don'ts. Okay. Like, don't email every day. So, you know, make sure that your communication is not overwhelming. So, you know, if you want to email, you know, a couple times a month, that's fine. And make sure that there's gratitude in there. Acknowledge what they are doing well. And whenever possible, try to frame things as questions rather than demands. That goes a long way as well. But definitely acknowledging the things. I once had a student come in with a coffee for me, and that was really nice. You know, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do gifts or things, but like a little thank you card or, you know, before winter break is nice. Any sort of acknowledgement helps teachers to feel like, okay, they notice that I'm putting in this extra, well, not extra effort, but like I'm trying to support this child to the best of my ability. I'm really glad they're noticing that. It does help.
Is it also, I mean, I always felt for me like it's a partnership, right? It's a partnership between you and the teacher, and you want the teacher to believe that you're there to support them. They're there to support you. You're all there to support the child. So coming in with sort of a collaborative and partnership kind of feeling, I can't think of my words right now. I'm sorry.
No, and it is such a relief when you get a sense as a teacher, when you get a sense from a parent that, oh my goodness, they know how hard this job is. They know how many demands there are. Like, I can relax and just like talk person to person with this parent. Like, that's a really nice place to be. So when you communicate with them, you know, you want them to know that you understand where they're coming from. That'll go far.
I was going to add to that empathy on both sides. I mean, you need to, as a parent, we need to be empathetic and try to understand what the teachers might be going through, especially that first month. Oh my God. Yeah. But that goes both ways. I mean, if you show empathy, then you'll get that compassion in return for your child.
Does that help, Jen?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much.
Okay, no problem. Andrea, great. You did Kara's intro sheet on the first week. Excellent. That's fantastic. I'm glad it worked for you. And advice for JK moms before we start our school journey, do's and don'ts to start off right. I think some of the things you just said for sure. Mm. Any other tips? Junior kindergarten, Bruce.
JK. Thank you. Something that I haven't had to deal with for like 20 years.
I actually can speak to this. I'm sure this is Kara's area of expertise, but I do have some experience. We have to keep in mind for junior K and senior K, senior kindergarten, Bruce, that a lot of the times, and even though, for example, if your child is in the process of getting a diagnosis, it's always important to provide whatever documentation you currently have, whether it's from a speech and language pathologist or occupational therapist, while you're waiting, especially in Ontario, the wait times are incredibly long, while you're waiting to get a diagnosis, it's important to open the lines of communication with the teacher. But what's really important is that these kids in you know, JK and SK, they learn through play. And first and foremost, that is the most important thing. And it's they start developing those social skills at a very young age, and this is the time for them to do it. So it's great to have that structure and that regimented, you know, regimented routine and you know, always staying on top of the child and you know, eliminating behavior. But in the end, they are there to be social, to make friends, to learn a little bit, to gain some confidence in meeting new people, trusting new people. And that's what we kind of, they're still kids, they're kids. And that's what we need to think about first and foremost. Let them be kids. The rest will happen. Sometimes it may not be right in JK or SK, but it will happen. That's my suggestion.
It's still kids in grade 12 as well.
Yeah.
Much as they look like adults, like that's the thing about teaching grade 12s.
Much as they think they know everything.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen part one and part two of this series of webinars, we have lots and lots of tips in those on back to school.
Yeah.
Highly recommend. I'm going to send, just so everyone knows, I will send an email to everyone that's that has given us our email address. So everyone that's on this webinar tonight and was on the last two webinars tomorrow, I'll send an email out with all of the links we've talked about over the course of this. I'm also going to send a little survey because, you know, great idea to talk about disclosure. When do you disclose? How do you disclose? We're working on some more podcast and speaker series topics. So we'd love to have your feedback for sure. This back to school, this is the second time we've done this back to school series, and it always takes three because there's so much to talk about. So we will do it again next year. You know, we would love your feedback on some of the other ideas. You're all in different places. Some of you have kids who have just been diagnosed. Some of you have kids who have had their diagnosis for a while, and it's super helpful to know what you want to hear more about. And we have a very, very good team here that wants to talk and share and create acceptance and do all of those things. So I think unless there's any other questions, we'll wrap it up there with me saying, you know, we are a resource. Autism Canada is a resource for you. We have two amazing people, Bruce and Dominique, who answer the phone and reply to your emails whenever they come in. They have a huge database of resources that they can share with you. And, you know, we also have experts like Kara who are here to help, and we can connect you or you can connect directly. So don't ever be afraid to reach out. We are, you know, this is what we do every day. So thank you all for joining us tonight. I don't think there are any more questions. I don't see any more. Glad it was a good use of your time tonight, Alana. That's great. And Shannon, you're not alone. Believe me, there's lots of us out there. And in fact, you know, there's lots of people to talk to. So please don't be afraid to call or email, or, you know, watch our social media and our website and our newsletters. If you don't get our newsletters, sign up for those, because one of our newsletters every month is articles written by people who are on the spectrum. And so there's all sorts of interesting stuff that comes out every month in our newsletters. The other thing that's super exciting is that on October 22nd, we're hosting our annual Awesome Conference. And for those of you who don't know, Awesome is a day of presentations that centers the autistic voice. So it's all presentations by people on the spectrum. One of our presenters this year is the fabulous Kara Diamond. We have an 8-year-old boy who's going to be presenting. He did a presentation to his class, and he's going to be sharing that with us at Awesome. We have someone talking about aging. We have someone talking about education. So we have all sorts of great presentations coming up on October 22nd. If you'd like to sign up, you can go to our website and register, and we will send you the link for that as well. And I think that's all I have right now. Follow us on social media and you'll get all of our information for sure. But thank you to this amazing panel for spending three nights with us. It's a lot of time, and it's a lot of fun. We always have a lot of fun. And this format is great, where we just sort of chat and open it up to questions. So we'll be doing this some more. Thank you, Kara, Dom, and Bruce. And thank you everyone for spending your Tuesday night with us.
Thank you for joining us today. Stay tuned for more episodes of Sharing the Spectrum and Autism Canada podcast. The beautiful music you heard is from Bruce Pethrick. Bruce is a neurodiverse musician and friend of Autism Canada. You can check out more of his music on his website at brucepethrick.com. Our executive producer is Barbara Patton. Julie Perkis is our producer. Additional thanks to the Autism Canada team, including Tafari Anthony, Shannon Selinsky, Dominique Payment, Mariana Curick, and Earl Selinsky. For more information about Autism Canada, don't forget to visit us at autismcanada.org. You can also find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube.